Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this last day of May, Thursday, the 31st. When you think of the Midwest, what comes to mind? This is what came to mind for me.
That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.
Garrison Keillor and a prairie home companion. Is there a Midwest state of mind, an identity, something unique that binds all of us together who live here, something that distinguishes us from other regions of the country? What is it you love about the Midwest, or maybe not love so much? We'll talk about what it means to be a Midwesterner this hour and maybe dispel some of the stereotypes that perhaps only ordinary, boring, but nice people live here, and that all we do is milk cows and eat cheese. Not that there's anything wrong with that. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. We will talk with the co-editor of the American Midwest, an interpretive encyclopedia, Christian Zacher, a professor of English and director of the Institute for Collaborative Research and Public Humanities at Ohio State University. This is a humongous book with nearly 1,900 pages packed with all things Midwest, the history, the politics, the culture. 12 Midwestern states are featured, of course, including Wisconsin. Professor Zacher joins us from Ohio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me onto your show.
Oh, thanks for being with us. This thing has to weigh about 10 pounds. I got a workout carrying it into the studio.
It is heavy.
Yeah. So is Ohio really in the Midwest?
Well, as you look at the edges of what we define as the Midwest, you could get some debate about parts of Ohio anyway, as about parts of Missouri and maybe parts of Minnesota.
Yeah, and I don't mean to make you sigh, but this is a debate that that we have had as to really what is the Midwest region? What are the boundaries?
That's very true. If one looks at other parts of the country that we give names to, like New England, there's no disagreement that that's six states. The South, most people would generally agree on what states make up the South, having to do with the outcome of the Civil War. Maybe even the Western states, there would not be much debate about what belongs in or out of them. But it's that whole part in the middle that, especially in the 20th century, became a little bit unclear to people, at least when they were looking at the north, south, east, west edges of it.
Yeah, so what are the boundaries as far as your book is concerned?
Right. Well, and we turned to lots of different authorities and I suppose ended up with a consensus opinion. It's certainly what the U.S. Census Department says is the Midwest. But in talking to historians and geographers and others, it seemed pretty clear that it goes from Ohio through four states, the Dakotas, North and South Dakota, Nebraska and Kansas, but only really the eastern portions of those states, and then all of the other states in between. So it's eight states in completely and four other states partially.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I always remember referring to Wisconsin as being a part of the upper Midwest.
And that's another term that gets introduced into the discussion in the 20th century. Upper suggests a lower, but I don't think we ever hear any states called the lower Midwest.
That's right. It
might be something implying something inferior there.
I've heard meteorologists, though, on national television when talking about tornadoes going through, I don't know, Oklahoma, calling it the Midwest and thinking, I don't know if I'd call that the Midwest.
I know. Well, some people did. And, and if you do something like go to the Yellow Pages in Oklahoma and look up the use of the word Midwest in the titles of companies, there are endless more named the Midwest than there are, say, in Indiana or Illinois. It's a curious thing. But certainly that phrase, upper Midwest, does get used for large parts of Wisconsin, Minnesota, certainly North Dakota. Even I've seen maps that have it going out through Montana and northern Idaho.
Yeah. But we're talking, for this book, eight states and parts of four others.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so...
We're also talking, by the way, about the Midwest elsewhere, but that's something we could get into.
Yeah. What is the Midwest elsewhere?
We talk about it now and then in our book, in the same way that the Midwest has chiefly been populated over the past century by people coming from the East, in the same way there are all kinds of people who left the Midwest but took it with them, so that you get, say, Columbus, Nebraska, founded by people from Columbus, Ohio, or Peoria, Arizona, founded by those people from Illinois.
So why do these Midwesterners leave, but then want to recreate the Midwest where they go?
I know that's one of our basic questions. I'm a Midwesterner, and when I talk to other people, for instance, when they're going on vacation, most vacationers are always looking for something unusual or different, so they go to the warmer South or the more historic East or the much more watery North. But they always come back to the Midwest, and I think it's partly because of the attractions, not just of home, but of what is ordinary. You were saying that at the outset, and I think one of the key attractions of the Midwest is its ordinariness.
What? Those are fighting words.
I suppose they are, but as a Midwesterner, maybe I can get away with it.
Yeah. So I thought that maybe that we were just kind of ordinary. It was sort of a negative stereotype.
Well, it's one of those things that can flip either way. Over the last couple of centuries, it's very clear that the Midwest has come to be seen as the norm or the given or the standard for normalcy, partly because it's literally geographically in the middle, against which a lot of other places can be compared.
We might be ordinary, but we're above average.
You and Garrison Keillor would make that case, indeed.
What was the goal of this massive undertaking, this huge encyclopedia of all things Midwest?
And a lot of the people here at Ohio State and a lot of the people we rounded up to be editors really were eager to create the first comprehensive portrait of this region. There have been a number of encyclopedias of regions done in the last 20 or 30 years, and no one had offered to do one for the Midwest. And when Indiana University Press, that publishes lots of encyclopedias and lots of other books about the Midwest, when they came to us, we said, well, we'll give it a try. We really wanted to make it a comprehensive depiction of the people's, places, history, and not just deal with the Midwest as a past idea, which you and I might want to talk some more about, but also as a place where so many pressing contemporary issues are at stake: the decline of rural America and the decline of the small farm, something very keen to Wisconsinites, or the search for alternative energy sources, wind and ethanol, clearly are Midwest possibilities, or the decline of the U.S. auto industry, or the Midwest as a reservoir of some of the best water on earth in a country in a world that's experiencing the lack of water. Mm-hmm. The Midwest is reflective of all kinds of changing ethnic profiles of the entire country. And certainly it's also home to states that are determining presidential elections.
Mm, that's right. Well, I also thought that the project was intended to, I don't know, look for that, to celebrate the importance of the region and the cultural and historical aspects of the region, but also the diversity of the region and to counter stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think you've caught one of the important motives we had. When people think of the Midwest as flat and bland and ordinary in a bad sense, I mean, or lacking diversity, that's when I'd like to open up our table of contents and urge them to read a whole raft of unexpected articles. There's one, for instance, on African-American resort communities, one famous one of which is in Wisconsin, or the article on museums run by Native Americans, or simply the list of major inventions produced by Midwesterners. Mm-hmm. There are a number of ways that we try and get at this question of unpredictability and diversity to try and counter that old stereotypic idea.
Besides the being normal, is there some is there something that binds all of us Midwesterners together?
Well,
or anything that unifies the region?
If you talk just about the natural quality of the region, I think that a lot of experts would say that the what differentiates the Midwest from any other region is that it's flat, it has plenty of water, it's a home to farms, and it's enormously fertile. And on top of that, generally forested. And you can find any one of those ingredients anywhere else, and certainly in North America, but all of them together really do, you can tell if you have them all together that you're coming into the Midwest. It's something we tried to capture, by the way, in the cover of the book, a Grant Wood painting of the birthplace of Herbert Hoover in West Branch, Iowa. And the painting has got all of that there. It's farm life. It's flat to a degree, and it has water running through it, and it's forested. It seems to be the one way to think about the Midwest.
We are talking about the Midwest, the American Midwest, which is a new interpretive encyclopedia. It's a huge encyclopedia, about 1,900 pages of history and culture and politics of 8 Midwestern states and parts of 4 others. We welcome your thoughts about what comes to mind when you think of the Midwest. What sorts of images, what sorts of stereotypes maybe, what sorts of values? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon for At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5, Ben will talk with a guest who says that the Veterans Health Administration provides the highest quality health care in the nation, despite all the recent stories about substandard conditions at veterans' hospitals. That's coming up after 5 this afternoon. We are talking about the charms and the stereotypes of the Midwest with one of the editors, the co-editor of The American Midwest, an interpretive encyclopedia, Professor Chris Zacher, professor of English and director of the Institute for Collaborative Research and Public Humanities at Ohio State University. And we welcome your stereotype of the Midwest or your question for our guest, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And before I go to the phones, Professor Zacher, one of the person who profiled Wisconsin for the encyclopedia was a writer who lives in western or northwestern Wisconsin, Michael Perry.
Yes.
And he's been a guest on Wisconsin Public Radio more than a couple of times. And I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but what I remember from his essay was that even though Wisconsin has produced wonderful things like Liberace, the typewriter, and many other noteworthy contributions to culture and society, we are known primarily as the cheeseheads. And that's what kind of persists around the country, that we are the cheeseheads. He'd prefer that we were called cheddarheads rather than cheeseheads.
Yes, he's very humorous about that. We were fortunate to get him to agree to write the profiles. One of our decisions in putting the book together was to focus chiefly on these states as a region, but we're very aware that many people think of themselves as residents of states more than of regions. Mm-hmm. So a compromise we effected was to ask well-known writers from these 12 states to give us their personal take on what the state was like in terms of its relationship to all the others, which was a very tough assignment. But in my years of wandering through Wisconsin, I thought that his essay really caught the nature of the place.
That's right. I almost forgot. The producer of this program, Karen Prager, said that you have spent a lot of time in Wisconsin.
Indeed. I'm a Chicagoan, but over the years have spent time with relatives in Menominee and Milwaukee and Red Granite and Lake Kagansa. growing up in Chicago, Wisconsin always seemed to me enormously greener and hillier and fuller of water than northern Illinois anyway.
Well, and Wisconsin would call you a flatlander, right?
Right. Or maybe worse. One of the sections in our book is includes the jokes that people in different Midwest states tell about people in other Midwest states.
That's right. There's sort of a feud going on with, there's a Wisconsin-Illinois rivalry, but also a Wisconsin-Minnesota one to a certain extent. But it's more Minnesota versus Iowa, isn't it?
Yes, there's a triangle of jokes there, and I think they're interchangeable.
Yeah. I have a list here, and I might use them throughout the program a little bit if you're from Wisconsin, if.
That's right. Well, Michael Perry was really an important contributor to the volume, but there were a number of other experts, scholars, and other experts like William Cronin from Wisconsin-Madison, and Jim Leary, who did our folklore section, also from Wisconsin-Madison.
Yeah. One of them, in fact, it might have been Jim Leary, who said that one of the reasons some of these negative stereotypes persist, for example, calling people who live in Wisconsin cheeseheads, is that we'll laugh about that. Call us a cheesehead, and we'll put a cheesehead on and mug for the cameras. We have a good sense of humor in Wisconsin.
And I think that's extended throughout the Midwest. There's a kind of self-sufficiency or confidence that allows people to be humorous and tell those kinds of jokes about themselves. One way to get at the question you asked earlier about what is the nature of the Midwest is for folks to look at the first essay in the book by James Shortridge, who explains that our current notion of the Midwest is a little different from what it was at the beginning. Right after the Civil War, a lot of people from the North and South continued to move westward into the plains and the mountains, and it led other people to start calling one part of that area the Southwest, mainly Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and then people in the northern part, the Dakotas, were defined as the Northwest. And, of course, that left the middle part to be called the Midwest. So originally, Kansas, northern Kansas, and Nebraska were called the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And the characteristics that people focused on right away were that it was a vast area, it was fertile, it was a place of very great extremes of climate, from tornadoes to terrible winters to terrible summers, but also then the home of a idealized rural people who worked the land and were very different from what was seen as the old and declining eastern United States, and very different here in the Midwest from the untamed, radical, reckless people who lived in the land further west.
Let me. We have lots of callers who want to join us, so I do want to bring in some callers to the discussion. Mm-hmm. Jeannie in Green Bay has been waiting. Hi, Jeannie, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to follow up on the last point that the professor made. I have heard of an urban legend that happened about 25 years ago when Walt Disney World in Florida opened their doors, and they had lots of people in line wanting to work. And they made an announcement, anybody who grew up or was educated in the Midwest, please take one step to your right and come over here. And they were all immediately hired. And the reason being because supposedly the work ethic and the education, and as somebody once pointed out, also the white breadness, so to speak, of the Midwest. So I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Is that an urban legend, did you say, Jeannie, or
yes,
want to know
it is.
If it is?
Yeah. No. It's an urban legend.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Jeannie. It could well be true. It sounds like a good enough test to me. Just a side note, Walt Disney grew up in Marceline, Missouri, and some people have tried to go look at the main street of that small town and see how he captures some of it in the main street of Disneyland. At any rate, there is something to that. Our editor of our language section has a sentence. Maybe I could read it to you, Joy.
Please.
It captures some of what Jeannie's talking about. He says, the myth of the Midwest or the heartland is that Midwesterners are thought of as strong, brave, polite, hardworking, self-sufficient, generous, friendly, Protestant, white, normal, and boring.
Well, except for that Protestant part, I agree. No.
Exactly. It depends who's doing the defining mm-hmm. here. But that's that long list of words has a lot of words that capture what Jeannie was saying about that urban legend and what it is that people look for when they're hiring workers. They want them to be, in effect, Midwesterners.
Thank you very much, Jeannie. Gene in Oshkosh, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Having with my military service and academic career, I've been able to teach and live in many parts of the country. But I am a Midwesterner. But there are a couple things that jump out at me, and I didn't hear your total program so far. But I think values and of overriding importance to me is the communication skills. They speak differently. In fact, if you drop south of, go down to Bloomington Normal and south of that, you have a total different vocalization of the English language. Whereas if you're probably in Columbus, Ohio, where I have a daughter and son-in-law who teach at Ohio Northern, that's pretty much what Midwest. And I guess the major point I want to make is that this set of adjectives that you just enunciated really doesn't know states' boundaries. I think if you look at northern Ohio, I think if you look at perhaps the extreme north, Michigan, Minnesota, some of the Dakotas, even parts of Kansas, there is a swath, and including some of extreme southern Canada. These people are transferable from one spot to another, but they're not transferable from, let's say, the suburbs of Chicago down to the land between the lakes at the southern end of Illinois. And you can notice these differences as you drive through the country, but especially their ability to communicate in English, their choices of music, and I think there's a value system differential as well. And I'd be happy to take your comments off the air. Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Gene. Professor?
I think there's a lot of truth in that. One thing that you're pointing to, Gene, is the growing difference between urban, including suburban, dwellers and people who live outside the cities. There are all kinds of differences that we've noticed in various parts of the encyclopedia that point to that. In some states, it's growing separation. In other states, it's there's more similarity between the two parts. But it's also true, and I guess I'd urge you to look at the section we have called Language by the expert Dennis Preston that I just quoted. That long list of words he used, he really finally disputes most of them. He thinks of them as a myth imposed upon the Midwest by people from elsewhere. But there are certain words that he would be willing to defend, and I think values captures a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. A lot of anchors for national television stations often were from the Midwest because that was considered the American dialect. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. That was generally more true than it is today.
Mm-hmm.
People point to figures like Dan Rather and others who were raised regionally and employed in regional systems that maybe made it to the networks, but they are increasingly invited or allowed to bring their regional dialect with them. It's very tricky to try and define a pattern to linguistic change at any time, and particularly in a region as volatile and large as the Midwest. But it's certainly true that in the 40s and 50s, 60s, that there was an attempt, perhaps, by networks to find a homogenizing sound that they defined as dialect-free. But people like our editor, Dennis Preston, would argue that there's a dialect going on there anyway.
Mm-hmm. Maureen in Madison is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I had a personal story. I was raised in Michigan, lived in Chicago, then moved to Pennsylvania for a while. And when I drove from Pennsylvania back to Michigan one time, and I passed Cleveland, I suddenly realized how connected I was to the topography and geography of the Midwest. And we currently live in Madison, and I'm so happy. Mm. And one of my questions for the professor would be, you know, are people who are polite and friendly and all those adjectives you use for the Midwest, are they attracted to the Midwest, or is there something about the land of the Midwest that sort of makes you that way? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wish I could answer that quickly and definitely for you. It's one of the issues we struggled with throughout the book and asked all the editors to think about. First, is that string of those kinds of adjectives, are those meant to be positive or critical? And second, are they truer of some parts of the Midwest than others? As you drove from Pennsylvania into Ohio, I'd be interested, for instance, to know where exactly you thought you were leaving one cultural zone and moving into another. It's very difficult to tell. I live almost on the eastern boundary of the Midwest. But I have colleagues and friends who would say, no, Pittsburgh is where it ends or begins. Mm-hmm. Others would say Buffalo is, because of a history of economic and trading history out of Buffalo and the Great Lakes.
Yeah, you point out there's no entrance or exit sign to the Midwest.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm.
But there's something that draws the Midwesterner back home. There's something that, as Maureen said, makes her happy to be back in the Midwest in Madison now. What is that?
Well, you're asking the toughest question. Exactly what is it? I think it's a combination of the values that Gene was talking about, and maybe a comfort with the landscape, maybe a familiarity, the familiarity of the sound of the language spoken suddenly. There, apart from certain characteristics of Upper Midwest American English, there is a strong similarity in dialect between people from Iowa and people from Ohio.
Mm-hmm. I think it was in your encyclopedia, but it was Bob Dylan, from his book about him, about how he, you know, left Minnesota and the Iron Range because he had to get out of there, but that he will really always be there, that he'll probably go back there, that it's a part, it's who he is.
That's right. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm North Dakota, Minnesota, Midwestern, I'm that color, I speak mm-hmm. that way, I'm from some place called the Iron Range, yeah.
Yeah. Next we go to Darwin in DeSoto. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. My father drove cars out of GM in Janesville for 31 years. And yes, we were quite familiar with Jimmy Hoffa and all this and that back in the 50s and the 60s. The Midwest, by that profession, is defined as Wisconsin, Minnesota, to the mid-cities, because after that the land gets flat. Iowa and Illinois, and none of Michigan, because everything past that got put on a train. And it was those four states, that's it.
Uh-huh.
And that was based on the auto making?
The transportation of the automobiles out of Janesville. And so they ran a pretty much like a circle, but it took in all of Wisconsin, Minnesota to the Twin Cities, because after that it became flatlands. And then to deadhead that far wasn't worth the money, so you take them to the dealerships thus far on around, and those dealerships would include pretty much all of Illinois, going down 55, some of Iowa, Lone Tree, for an example, you know, and...
Okay, well, we get you, Darwin. Would have been a much smaller book than Professor Zacher.
Well, it makes sense in a way. Janesville is not that far from Chicago, and Chicago... or Chicagoland, an important word, by the way, really is such an enormous influence on the entire region. There's a terrific new, fairly new encyclopedia of Chicago that had to deal with that large question of Chicago's relationship to the Midwest. And we spend a lot of time in our book talking about the Midwest's relationship to Chicago. And William Cronin is certainly a major thinker about that.
We're talking with Christian Zacher, professor of English, director of the Institute for Collaborative Research and Public Humanities at Ohio State University. He is co-editor of the brand new, The Huge, The American Midwest, an interpretive encyclopedia. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We're talking about the charms, the stereotypes, the values, the identity of the Midwest. And we welcome your questions for him, or your image of what comes to mind when you think of the Midwest, or maybe your joke for somebody who lives in another state. We talked a little bit about how the states in the Midwest like to poke jokes at each other. If they're tasteful, we'll take one of those too. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. A used bookstore owner in Kansas City began burning books in a protest of what he sees as society's diminishing support for the printed word. Kathleen Dunn and her guests after 9 will examine our reading behaviors coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about the American Midwest, a new interpretive encyclopedia co-edited by our guest this hour, and Barbara in Wapaka is with us next. Hi, Barbara, you're on the air.
Hello. I had two comments. I really have enjoyed this program. I didn't get to listen to the whole hour, but one of the things I wanted to just say is, you know, you're from Wisconsin if you're a driver who has hit a deer.
Yeah, that's right.
And I just recently hit a deer, and you know, I'm without a car now. And everybody that I have, I mean, my two neighbors and almost everybody I've talked to have said, you know, I'm sorry, I don't have a car, I hit a deer. They go, oh, well, I hit a deer, oh, you know. Everybody seems to have a story like that. Even my mother. When I called my mother and said, Mom, I totaled my car, she said, well, when I hit a deer.
Yeah, and when my parents were alive living in northern Wisconsin, they hit like 5 deer. So,
yeah.
It was, I don't know, is hitting deer, is that a thread that holds us all together, Professor Zacher?
I hear it a lot in Minnesota, too.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be something important about this.
Yeah. Thank you, Barbara. Paul in Jefferson, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. The point I wanted to make was, you know, everywhere else, like East Coast, West Coast, everybody's rushing around. Everybody's got to be somewhere in a hurry. And, you know, here in Wisconsin, we take the time. You know, we don't have to hurry up to get everywhere. And we take the time to stop and smell the flowers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to offend your speaker there, but I refuse to recognize Illinois as a true Wisconsin folk.
You don't think that that's a part of the Midwest, Paul?
Oh, everything south of Chicago is deep south. I've been down there, and I can't understand them. They don't talk like we do.
What's going on with that, Professor Zacher? Is it a different culture, northern Illinois versus southern Illinois?
I think there is. Some people would say that there are three Illinois. And the author of our profile on the state of Illinois makes that case, that there's Chicago, there's the deeply southern part of southern Illinois, and then a stretch in the middle. As a kid growing up in Chicago, I probably never ventured south of Bloomington or of Springfield, except to get to St. Louis. So there is a kind of myopia about people that live in the greater Chicago area. They do see Illinois as a different place. But that's certainly true in some ways here in Ohio and in other of the Midwest states that have a large metropolitan area, like, say, the Twin Cities. They have unusual relationships with the rest of their states and the rural areas.
Mm-hmm. Is Paul right that we're not in a hurry here and people are in a hurry elsewhere?
Well, that's a, a, that's a sense that some people would have of places in the Midwest, but you hear that said an awful lot of Southern
mm-hmm,
people
mm-hmm.
In certain parts of the West. But one thing that one of your earlier callers mentioned that I should have picked up on more was the sense of community that she felt in different living in different parts of the Midwest. I think that's something that we emphasize a lot in the book, in the way that the sense of community is embodied in philanthropy. People point out that Cleveland, for instance, is the birthplace of United Way and of the first community city foundation. And further, that almost a quarter of all community foundations in the country are in three Midwestern states. There's something important about, in Midwestern history, past and present, about these foundations as a reflection of the community desire to be part of the larger community.
Yeah,
that's not to say you don't find it elsewhere in the country, but the numbers are pretty impressive about how dominant a form of human expression that is in the Midwest.
Dee Dee in Madison is with us now. Hi, Dee Dee.
Hi. I haven't heard all the program, but so far I haven't heard anything about social action. Social legislation?
We were waiting for you to bring it up, Dee Dee.
Here it comes. Where else are you going to find where there was a Democratic Socialist mayor for almost 80 years other than Milwaukee, and the impact of the Germans who came at that time into... And the same kind of trend certainly was Minnesota and the Dakotas, too. Where was the Farmers Union? Where did it start and where did it grow from if it wasn't the Dakotas?
Yeah, we're a pretty progressive area, aren't we, Professor Zachar?
That is something that I haven't talked about much this morning, but it's something that we press on in many of our sections. That is the range of political thought and action that you can find in Midwest history, from conservative to liberal, from progressive to radical, and certainly Wisconsin, back through La Follette and up through Joe McCarthy, is a monument to different kinds of political expression. But that's certainly true of Minnesota, of the mayor that she mentioned, Dee Dee mm-hmm. mentioned, from Milwaukee, but in lots of parts of the Midwest, a huge piece of American political history has played out here.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't put Joe McCarthy certainly in that progressive category, but some of the legislation that Dee Dee was referring to, too, there. You know, what I think that we had the first workman's compensation law in Wisconsin, had the first kindergarten in the country in Wisconsin, so there was a lot of forward thinking.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Kay in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I lived in Florida for about a year and a half, but otherwise I always lived in Wisconsin. And I said to people that I decided I was really a Midwesterner after all. And some of the things that I pointed out in my limited experience living in another state was that I really missed the quality of the social services and the attitude toward conservation and parks and protecting the environment and the quality of the public schools. And someone else was mentioning about progressive ideas, the idea of the cooperative starting. And I think a lot of that was also the Scandinavian influence, particularly I think of in Minnesota and Michigan as well as Wisconsin. I wonder what your...
Professor Zachar.
You're absolutely right. Those are all crucial features of Midwest history and the present. Again, the concern for social services is another way to see that interest and devotion to community. Philanthropy goes in one direction, and social services is connected with it. The City Beautiful movement that was so visible in the World's Fair of 1893 in Chicago and had an awful lot of Chicago roots is perhaps something that came out of the Midwest more easily than out of any other part of the country. Carnegie libraries may be more numerous in the Midwest than elsewhere in the country, that desire to make reading and access to knowledge available for everyone, not just the kids in public schools, seems a very Midwestern trait.
Yeah, and what about conservation and nature? Alda Leopold from Wisconsin. Is that a value that's shared by the entire region?
I think it is. There are comparable figures in Midwest history throughout most of the states. I don't know enough to measure that, though, against what has historically occurred in other states, especially, say, the North California and the Northwest.
Yeah. Mary in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm curious how we came to be called the Midwest. Seems that we're not really the Midwest. We're more central.
Yeah, it is a tricky business. One of the struggles we had in the book was figuring out the different meanings of the use of the word Midwest over time. As I mentioned, after the Civil War is when people start to call the very center of the country, Kansas, Nebraska, they start to call that the Middle West because they've renamed the area above it Northwest and the area below it Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, both the Northwest and the Southwest get pushed further. We wouldn't think today that only Texas is Southwest, and we wouldn't think that only the Dakotas are Northwest. So as the country moves further west, those terms expand. But then a curious other thing happens. The word Midwest reaches east and grabs all of the states that we're talking about all the way to Ohio. But it's middle in the original sense of the word was that it was middle in that there's a north above it and a south below it. But I think over time, and others of our expert contributors think too, that the middle, the word middle, starts to carry other associations having to do with values and being in the middle, not being in the extreme. And that starts to color our idea about the geographical thing that we call the Midwest.
Interesting, yeah. Well, it sounds better than flyover states, right?
Much better, or Rust Belt area.
Yeah. Or, well, actually, the Heartland. It also is known as the Heartland, isn't
it? Indeed. Mm-hmm. That's probably the most common name for it, and that suggests something more than the word Midwest suggests, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the country is a body and the Midwest is the heart, that's what keeps it all going.
Kathy in Marshfield. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm really enjoying this program. I just have a short anecdote. My husband and I were traveling in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we'd been there about 2 weeks, and we kind of had enough of it. We were talking about dirt and rocks and deformed little pinyon pine trees, and we couldn't wait to get back to Wisconsin. And our waiter asked us, well, where are you from? And we said, Wisconsin, you know, very proudly. And he said, oh, yeah, I've been there. So many trees you can't see your hand in front of your face. So I guess beauty is a little bit in the eye of the beholder.
It's similar to a joke told by about a person from Colorado who's hosting a friend from Iowa, and after the Iowan has been there a little while, the Colorado person says, well, what do you think of our place? And the guy from Iowa says, well, the mountains aren't bad, but they do get in the way of the view.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Yeah, we haven't gotten a whole bunch of jokes here, but that's cute. The mosquito is the state bird of Wisconsin, too, is another.
Yes, indeed. I've experienced it landing a number of times.
Bob in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I kind of resent the fact that the East and West Coast kind of look down on the Midwest. It is flyover country. It kind of gets second billing on everything. But when they have national events or basketball tournaments or anything, they schedule something maybe in St. Louis, but never in anywhere else in the Midwest. They overlook our presidential candidates never make it to the big time or the nomination or anything like that, and the New York Times, the Washington Post, the L.A. Times are the papers of record. They ignore the Chicago Tribune.
We don't get respect.
Like,
yeah.
We're treated like a backwater in the country. As you say, the Rust Belt And it seems like only the regions that have high military spending are valued in this country, and a low military spending region like ours is dismissed.
No, why? What's going on here, Professor Zacher?
Well, I think that's true. That's a lot has to do with where the political and media power in the country resides, Bob. But when it gets near presidential election time, things change, right? If you live in Iowa or Ohio mm-hmm. or a number of other Midwest places, you're suddenly treated with a lot more attention. What you say, though, is interesting from another point of view. Think about the name we give or that somebody has given to the time zones of the country. There's Eastern, then we live in a place called Central.
Mm.
And then there's Mountain, which is a little more glamorous, and Pacific, which is refers to the ocean. Central is a fairly ordinary term, isn't it? But finally, I'd say that what we have and always will have is the water.
Oh, yeah, the Great Lakes.
Largest reservoir of fresh water on the planet. Not too many years ago, a governor of Ohio had some serious discussions with other Midwest governors about making a deal with the West and Southwest to exchange via pipelines water for oil. It sounds preposterous, maybe, but it might. It was long before we had oil shortages and water problems.
Yeah, so there's gold in these flatlands, huh?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to try one more quickly. Dina in Sun Prairie. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I never thought about this before, but my husband grew up on a farm in Adams County, and he grew up there before rural electrification, so it was the old-fashioned farming. And then he went on in the 40s and 50s. He was an orchestrator out in Hollywood, and he did such things as Singing in the Rain and Oklahoma and a lot of Doris Day movies and all kinds of stuff and Disney cartoons and whatnot, and I even think he did the Fantasia.
Yeah, so this was your dad?
No, my husband.
Oh, okay.
He's dead now. But when I never saw this before, but there's really a Midwestern flavor in all that stuff. It's very strong.
Ebs, you are so right. We talk a lot in our media section and the movie section, especially about those great Broadway plays and some just plain movies that use the Midwest as a background, a setting for very important ideas.
Well, we're out of time, Professor Zacher. Thank you so much. It was really an interesting hour.
I enjoyed it a lot.
Christian Zacher, Professor of English, Director of the Institute for Collaborative Research and Public Humanities at Ohio State University, co-editor of the American Midwest and Interpretive Encyclopedia, just published by Indiana University Press. Thanks to Karen Prager and Leo Duran for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.